Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It is now 8:09 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talkin', and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. It is what I love to do on a Sunday night, is sit here and gab with you, and it is a beautiful night here in Minneapolis. Well, this next half hour, you know, you hear parents complaining all the time about, you know, I want to leave this for my child, but they're not really interested in it. Or, you know, I had a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom house. I put everything in storage because I knew my college, age children would eventually, you know, get a job and need furniture for their first apartment or their first home. And it never turns out that way, it seems. Seriously, I will tell you my story in a moment. Well, to talk about what we should and should not save for our children, what they actually don't want, is a career appraiser of fine arts and antiques. She's active in the field for 30 years. Her name is Elizabeth Stewart, and she serves the Santa Barbara County area and has appraised for clients nationwide. She is joining us tonight to give us some clarity on how to get rid of stuff, what we should get rid of. And welcome to CCO, Elizabeth. Really appreciate you joining us on a Sunday night.
Hello, Geraldine. Happy to do it. Happy to be here.
So glad that you are. Okay, let's just jump right in. My story is that I have a storage unit full of things that matter to me, a 4-bedroom house and a 2-bathroom house. And I thought my children would want all this furniture that I had and little nicks and nacks from, you know, my travels and that sort of thing. I have 2 sofas, 2 dining room tables. I have 3 beds, but I finally got rid of 2 of them. I have coffee mugs that I've collected over the years, over the decades, and my children care about none of it. Well, maybe my daughter will take the coffee mugs, but it's frustrating. Times have really changed when it comes to what we leave our children, hasn't it?
Oh, that is so true. You know, Geraldine, I was doing a little bit research on you, and I know you're a mother of 2, and your kids are how old?
My daughter is 34. My son is 31.
Okay, so you've kind of been through this, I bet. May I ask you, are your kids' homes different from yours?
Are my kids what?
Your kids' homes, are they different from yours?
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. So it starts, our story starts in the home and how very different homes have changed over the 4 generations. So we have, you know, the traditionalist, the silent generation. Sort of, I'm in my late 50s, so that would be my mom's generation. Mm-hmm. And then I'm the boomer generation.
Yep,
and of course,
too.
There's the Gen X, and then there's the millennials.
Mm-hmm.
And if you study those 4 sets of generations and what their homes look like and what they value in those homes, it's very, very different. So we've kind of gone through a seismic change in what home means and what objects mean in the home. And so if you're sort of planning that, you, as you say, when your kids were going or looking like they're going to college, you rented this storage locker. And I have to tell you, I did the same, to the tune of $300 a month for my son, who was looking like he was going to get married in the future. And he had a steady girlfriend, and he did marry her. Well, when, of course, the time came and he bought a home, and I boxed up everything that I had saved for, I guess, 3 generations. So my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my mom, and myself.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I thought they'd probably love the formal china dinnerware.
Oh, gosh. Nobody uses that anymore.
No. I thought, they'll have 5 sets. They'll have 4-generation sets plus my Thanksgiving set. Do you think they wanted that?
Oh, no. In fact, you can't go. A lot of the stores like Macy's, when it was in business here in downtown Minneapolis, you couldn't even find China. Some stores have it, but you have to meet with their people to order it online, that sort of thing. That's how it's not popular, right?
That's exactly right. That's how it's not popular. And when I spoke to my daughter-in-law about it, you know, this goes back many generations. You know, maybe you could just keep a couple of sets for holidays. Really, Elizabeth, it won't go in the dishwasher. It won't go in the microwave. There's just no way. You know, and closely related, anything that has to do, your kids, Geraldine, do not want anything that has to do with a fine, I'm generalizing, of course, but with a fine table setting. So that would be the crystal glassware where you have your white wine, red wine, water, cordial, all that sort of thing. And in many cases, that is just too much trouble. That's just too delicate. And, you know, I got to tell you something. The wine glasses are too small.
Right. It is so true. The wine glasses today are like barrels.
That's true. And so my son and daughter-in-law did not want my, and you know, I've done this for a living for 30 years, and I've had all kinds of clients over those 30 years kind of have the same impressions. You know, my kids don't want it. What do I do with it? And I'll give you two ideas what you can do with fine porcelain dinnerware. If you have it, many of us have our moms and our grandmoms. Usually they're platinum or gold trim. Mm-hmm. Usually they'll blow up your microwave in a second put it in there.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can do is there's these services these days where they rent fine china for events, for weddings and such like. And those people are looking for this sort of thing. And they're looking for large sets, which is the direct opposite of what our kids, they don't want a large set for 24. Who does a dinner for 24, a formal dinner for 24 anymore?
Oh, you can barely find a place setting for 8 with just plain, regular, dishwasher-safe dishes at the discounter.
Right. That's right. That's what I'm talking about, Geraldine, how the homes are reflective of the tastes of those four generations, you know, going back to the traditional, the boomers, the Gen X, and the millennials. You'll see that this sort of thing kind of leaves as you go forward in the generation. In other words, the fine porcelain and the fine glassware, and sometimes even the fine sterling. If it's pre-1930 sterling, it probably has a fairly good heft or weight, and therefore could do something really, really kind of nice for you if you did a scrap value.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if it was a meltdown value. If it's pre-1930, then it is probably heavier and probably worth a lot more by weight. But it's hard to tell because many of the patterns, you know, I'm thinking of Repoussé by Kirk, for example, they have been going on for years and years, so it's hard to tell what year they are, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's little hints and clues. One is to weigh, you know, some of the spoons and look up online when they actually change the sterling weight. So that's something you can do with your sterling if your kids don't want it.
Okay, let's talk about why the children don't want it. I know that their uh-huh. taste in clothing and jewelry and, you know, linens and that sort of thing may not be their taste. However, if you grew up in a household where, you know, you're the griot. You're the one telling the stories. The parents are the ones telling those really important stories about these dishes. I just did that with some of my mother's dishes that crashed in our china cabinet not long after my father was killed by a drunk driver. I mean, literally just collapsing. And we were only able to save about 8 pieces. And they're everyday dishes back in the, you know, 70s. But today, they're really special. They have chips and cuts on them. But I set the table beautifully, and all the nieces and nephews were standing around, and we had our prayer. And then I said, let me explain why these chipped dishes are on this table and why it's special to us. And once I explained it, you know, it's amazing how now they'll say, hey, Auntie, I love one of those bowls that you had on the table, you know, last year. Or we have a green and white bowl, just one, that I remember from the time I could the time I could talk. And all my siblings love that bowl. We put it out every time, and we tell stories about that bowl. And if I told my mother, you better put it in your will, who's going to get it? Because we'll be fighting over that.
Right.
So not your bank accounts, that bowl.
That is what you're talking about, is what objects do to a narrative. And that's a really interesting concept. So what you're talking about is the object symbolizes relationships in a narrative. So you're, like you said, when you started talking about the china that crashed, that must have been really an amazing experience to have that posting after his death. But, you know, the issue is, what is the narrative? Well, the narrative, it means something about continuance. It means something about getting together, praying before a dinner, and this sort of thing. So what I found with some of my clients, that the narrative can actually outlast the object. And I have suggested to many of my clients that instead of passing on the objects, or if there's multiple, in your case, multiple family members who want that green and white bowl, what you can do is use modern technology. It's those Gen X and millennials language anyway, Geraldine. So what you do is you say, I'm going to tell the story, and I'm going to tell it on a video, or I'm going to tell it in photos. And it's sometimes my son's generation would rather have the narrative digitally, technologically, they'd rather have that than five cases of China.
Wow.
So I've had many, many clients come to us and say, can we make a video or a photograph file of just those things? The kids don't want them, but they do want the stories.
Yeah, they want the stories. And my daughter is one that would rather have, you know, pictures of her ancestors instead of a bowl, you know? I mean, she wants every story. She wants all the pictures. She wants to tell her children about it and give thanks for those ancestors. I mean, that's where my daughter's head is, right? And for me, there are just little things that my mother has that I hope that I will get that mean so much, because I knew she wore that, or I could smell her on that outfit, you know, or that jewelry. Uh-huh. So that's important to me. Let's talk a little bit about Antiques Roadshow, you know, where most people bring their items passed down to them, hoping to hear an appraisal appraiser like you that would tell them it's worth thousands, if not millions of dollars. Why aren't young people interested in, like, going thrifting and finding something and finding out it's worth a whole lot of money? Why doesn't that appeal to them?
I think for younger people, what is considered valuable is based on lifestyle changes and technology. And what I mean by that is that there's been a sort of a seismic shift in the concept of value. So the concept of value, if you consider the changes, in other words, from our grandparents, where the concept of value for them, for example, look at what was in your grandmother's china cabinet, for example, and you'll get a good concept of what was valuable. So those things talked about meals and family and togetherness and large gatherings and more formal way of life,
right?
And more formal meals, really. I mean, when you think about the china, the crystal, the silver, and the linen. But you don't see that as concepts of value. You know, you would see them abstracted. So you'd say, well, it's a concept of value that this piece of furniture is worth, you know, $2 million, which in some cases you'll find there are some very valuable things out there still.
Right.
But the idea is that does Gen X and the millennial generation, do they really want to go, first of all, learn about what makes that value great? In other words, you have to learn carpentry.
I understand that, and they understand that. But at the same time, Elizabeth, these are young people who are going to look at modern art. They're going to the museums. This is part of what they do, right? So if you can value ancient art and modern art, you know, contemporary art and all of that, then why wouldn't you value these pieces that you could possibly be able to gather and do something with that for your own families in the future? Now, we're running out of time, so I want to make sure that we get these six objects from our homes that our children don't want. You've come up with six objects, and I want to make sure we get those in. Go for it.
Sure. Okay. I would say in order of the least desirable to the not so desirable. So we'll start with the least. We discussed fine porcelain dinnerware.
Mm-hmm.
That would be number one that our kids don't want.
Okay.
Number two would be fine glassware and fine silverware and good crystal. Number three would be linens, you know, table linens, fine linens that you have to iron.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, can't believe that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, you know, from from many, many clients of mine, and also, you know, from polling that I do with my clients, Persian rugs are not high on the list.
Oh, they used to be.
They used to be, but they're not. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But if you think of a Gen X's Zen lifestyle and a very sort of beige on beige home, it just is an eye dazzler, and it won't work. Persian rugs. Dark, heavy furniture. When you talked about, will these kids ever learn to value a beautiful, heavy piece of furniture, that speaks about the concept of space in the house. Anything that takes up too much space in the house is not desirable at all. Mm-hmm. So this heavy, darker furniture, for example, beautiful sideboards and things that have, you know, too much activity, too much carving,
too big, too bulky,
mm-hmm. that's not going to fly. Anything silver-plated, and I talk about this because when my mom was married in the 50s, she was given tons of silver plate for any relish dishes,
right,
for example.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Silver plate vegetable service.
So they're not into that at all?
No.
Wow, that's a...
Yeah. No. That's... Here's a good one. Porcelain collector's plates. That is an absolute, you cannot give those away. You might as well have a Greek dinner party with those because the porcelain, you know those figural plates?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was like the famous ballerinas, the famous...
What was the name of the company? It starts with an I, didn't it?
There was Bradford Exchange is a company that I remember that had those collector's plates.
Right.
And they were, you know, Princess Di's wedding, you know, right. All those sorts of things. There is no market for those. And many, many people, especially my grandmother's age, mm-hmm. have boxes of those in the garage. They're absolutely worthless.
We are out of time. I wish we had more time to go through so much more with you because I do understand that you work with so many different clients that others don't really pick up. And, you know, I read about the bookcase or either one of those big TV cases that, you know, we had years ago, and they don't want any of that either. So, But I hope I can call on you again, Elizabeth. Really appreciate you joining us tonight.
I love it.
All right.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. And happy 4th next week.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Elizabeth Stewart. And again, she's a career appraiser of the art. We're going to take a break and we'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:27. Let's make that 8:28 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I just want to wrap that conversation up with what I thought was most important is that when you put a story to anything that you have that you want to leave your children, make sure that that story is meaningful. If it has a tie to a loved one that's really important to the family, you know, to how the family got started or what they did or, you know, how they changed the family's life. There's so many stories that we should always share with our children. And then continue to tell those stories. You know, at Christmas time, my family and I don't know if this will work for you, but my family and I, we do a game and we do a pot of maybe $40 to $100, depending on, you know, what we have that year. And we ask questions that are worth 10 cents, 25 cents, and 50 cents. And we have different categories like entertainment and, you know, in the news, current events, and Black history and American history. And then there's family history. And that's where most of the questions are. And it helps. Sometimes we have some of the same questions, but we word them differently because we want to make sure that they get it. That they remember how important it is, how important family is. So when you share in that, add something that you want to give the children eventually. I have this bowl. This bowl is important. This bowl may be worth something one day, but right now it's worth everything because it represents Aunt so-and-so or Uncle so-and-so or Mother so-and-so. It really does matter that we leave things to our children that they understand are worth it. Other than that, clean it out, get rid of it. I'm at that point in my life. I really need to clean out house. I have a whole storage bin full of these things that I was hoping my children would want. But they want leather contemporary couches or transitional furniture. And, you know, it's different. And don't be offended by it. Sell it to somebody who needs it and wants it. Give it away to the Catholic charities, whatever you need to do to lighten your load and just know that you don't need to hold on to it anymore, then do that. However, please note, everything that goes away comes back, and it will all be back again. The linens, the brass, the silver, All of it will be back in style eventually. All right, we're going to take a break. And coming up next will be Christopher Straub and Jolene Trovic. And we're going to talk a little bit about a Somali woman, a refugee, in fact, who appeared on the week of Allure's cover, Vogue and Allure. And it's amazing. Her name is Halima Aden. And, you know, I've always known that fashion looks back, you know, maybe a few decades. But to look back 1,000 years or so and the way that we dress and that sort of thing, that's a whole different story. And I can't wait to hear how fashion is changing and helping us to heal and so much more. At least that's what I believe. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is now 8:33. I meant to share with you Elizabeth Stewart's information, her website especially, elizabethappraisals.com. Again, that's elizabethappraisals.com. Also, if you want to check out her latest book, it's called Collect, Value, Divest, The Savvy Appraiser. And that is for download, in fact, at kkadownloads.com. kkadownloads.com. Love this song. It calms me down immediately. It is now 8:34 here at WCCO. Well, as I stated a moment ago, a Minnesota model is making waves. Her name is Halima Aden, and she was just on the cover of Vogue, and now the Somali refugee appeared this week on Allure's cover. Congratulations, Halima, if you're listening. Wow, that is huge. And it's amazing that fashion makes, it defines what our future can be when it comes to fashion. I'm never quite sure if it is leading the change or if we are leading the change and it follows. You know, they have throngs of people out and about, young people looking at trends, looking at what other young people are doing that aren't told to do it. There's nothing in the stores to show they should do it, but they do it, right? And so they get out there and see what the trends are and they kind of decide from there. Well, with this Minnesota model, this Somali refugee who is really making waves, I believe that this is something different. Instead of looking back a few decades, if you remember a few years ago, I said, what is this? People are starting to wear the clothes that were in my closet in the 70s. Well, that's not cool. I thought, you know, retro meant, you know, after you're dead. Of course it doesn't. So when it comes to fashion, you know, what goes around comes around. It'll come right back. But this is different. You know, the way the women dress and the type of fashion that's making a statement today. And believe me, there are designers who are really making a statement and kind of leading us forward with where we should go. And I think it's necessary, and I'm glad to see that it's happening. Joining me to talk about this is Christopher Straub, a designer. And in fact, he was on Project Runway, which is like my guilty pleasure. So I'm really excited to talk to him. And Jolene Trovic as well, both of them being involved in the fashion industry. Jolene is an independent designer brand that creates women's clothing, which is modern and refined while still allowing women to showcase their individual styles. Yeah, Jolene, welcome to both of you. Welcome to CCO.
Thank you.
All right,
great to be here.
Oh, Christopher, hey now. Dude, love that show. Loved you on the show. So tell me what your experience was on Project Runway. Did it change your life?
Oh, for me, it did. It really allowed me to become the business person and that I wanted to be prior to the show. And when people ask, why would you go on a show? Why would you put your life in hundreds of millions of homes all over the world? And it was a business decision. You know, it's face recognition, it's name recognition, and it really gave me opportunities that I wouldn't have gotten if I hadn't put myself on TV for 14 weeks and for reruns and for translated into how many languages around the world. So it really was a benefit to me and my business.
Well, congratulations to you. And Jolene, when it comes to fashion, there are so many people that are doing it today. You know, there are so many opportunities with technology and social media of getting your name out there, getting your designs out there. Do you depend on social media a lot for what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a perfect way to let people all across the world, so to speak, see what you have done. I mean, for Instagram, for example, you just throw a hashtag out there and you can have somebody over in China liking what you have posted. So it's social media is huge. It has a huge impact, and I think it's been really positive for so many other independent designers to kind of follow suit and use that as a way to showcase their brand and who they are.
And Jolene, I apologize for getting your last name wrong. It's Torvik, not Trovik. Torvik.
Okay.
I apologize for that.
No worries.
So let's jump right in. In some Muslim countries, fashion-forward designs for women are, you know, already making waves that have put some designers in jeopardy in their countries, it's particularly in the Middle East, garnering threats from some of the leaders. But in this particular sense, I believe fashion can begin to heal. In your understanding, Jolene, do you believe this as well?
I absolutely do agree with that. If you kind of look through history, fashion has been pivotal in a lot of different eras and decades. If you look throughout the 20s, the modern, before that, they were all wearing corsets and really tight dresses and long lengths. And then once the 20s came around after the war, they started loosening up their clothing. Everything became more casual and comfortable. And then you look into another decade of when the World War II began. The modern woman took on the roles of men, and they did their jobs. And so they started wearing pants during that time. And then you go for, and also for the 60s, for example, there was like that second feminist wave movement. And Yves Saint Laurent, he created a women's pantsuit for the modern woman of that era, which is still relevant today. So you kind of look at that aspect, and history has proven that it has had a huge impact on just on people's everyday lives.
Yeah.
And so it's a really great medium to drive a lot of really great positive things.
Yeah, Christopher, I agree with her on that. At the same time, you know, fashion began was utilitarian. It was what we had to wear. We needed it to be practical so that we could do what we needed it to do. And sometimes it was also fashionable. But nowadays, it is fashion first. You know, we know that those shoes are too high and they hurt. And we know that girdle is not supposed to be there, but we do it because we really want to look good and fashion forward. In knowing that, where do you lie with your designs and whether it's comfortable or not?
Well, my designs have sort of evolved since I started designing. And when I began as a male designer designing for women, it was very selfish. Like, I was just doing what I wanted to do. Like, this is what I feel like experimenting with today. But as trends change and my sort of ideas change, and we're having a moment in fashion again of sort of gender ambivalence now, I've sort of loosened my clothing and made it more male silhouettes on women, and not making it feel so constrained and not making it so the hem so high and stuff. And so I think right now, if you were to have asked me this question 5 years ago, I would have given you a different answer. But now I really do want a woman to feel comfortable in my clothes, because then she feels comfortable being her.
Yeah. And with this ever-changing demographic, this is really important to know, isn't it, Jolene? Because you've got, you know, people from around the world that are buying designs by you and by Christopher and by all of these designers across the world. And they have specific needs, just like we Americans do as well. So I think it's very real. What do you say?
No, I absolutely agree. You know, I think I might have a little bit more of an advantage over Christopher because I am a woman. I've had 3 kids. There's many other women out there that after you've had children, your body changes. And, you know, it doesn't matter what your background is, but you still want to feel really great and comfortable in what you're wearing. And if you look and embrace your own personal style and you feel comfortable, you're going to shine and you're going to make yourself be the best possible you out there. So I guess that is something that I always strive for, is to make women feel really good in their own skin.
You know, fashion also, it makes a statement. It's almost like it's talking out loud. It's speaking when you wear it, and it's speaking to you when you see it, right? There's a conversation that's happening through fashion. Now, that may sound ridiculous to some people, but I've seen T-shirts that start a conversation. It can have one word on it. I think it was President Trump's son who got off the plane when he and his mom, Melania, moved into the White House, and the only thing it said was, expert or something like that. It was one word on his T-shirt. And it was all the rage, right? Everyone was talking about, well, what does it mean? Why does he wear that? That's what fashion does. It speaks for us. It kind of walks in front of us and presents us before we ever open our mouths. And if we're having a conversation, Jolene, what kind of conversation does your fashion want us to have?
My fashion is all about being modern and refined for your own personal style. I think a lot of my designs are classic, and it's something that you can have in your closet for a very long time, but it's also something that you can also individualize and kind of layer it with things that are already in your closet and put on some fun jewelry to go with it. And it can transition from day to night very easily, whether you're working at a desk or you're going to go out and have some cocktails with friends. You know, it's something that is very classic and easy and effortless, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And Christopher, you already talked about, you know, women wearing men's clothing, you know, so it's very relaxed and you feel comfortable in it. I mean, that conversation is going to start long before that person opens their mouth.
Exactly.
So is in that purpose for you and making sure that conversation happens, how much do you put into defining that?
Well, when I dress anybody, and mostly women, I kind of specialize in women's wear, I really want that woman to be a risk taker. And so the clothes that she's wearing, the fashion that she's wearing, is a little different than the styles that are more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks, you know, to the point where you're talking about how the clothes speak for you before you get to the person. That's exactly what they do. And it says to everyone else, I'm not exactly like you. I'm a little different. I'm trying something new. I'm a risk taker, and I can tell you a story about mm-hmm. where this came from. And so you are absolutely correct on one word, one image, starting a story, starting a conversation. And I the past 2 days I was at Minneapolis Pride in Loring Park.
Mm-hmm.
I have a booth and I sell my goods, and that was exactly what we did all day. You would call out somebody who was wearing something that you wanted to talk about, whether it be an accessory or their clothing or their shoes. And you know, I don't know if I articulated what you just said ever in my life, but the clothing speaks before you get there.
Absolutely.
And I think that's such a great message for what we do. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been so cerebral in it, but that's exactly what it does.
But I find it interesting that you look at fashion through that particular lens, because, Jolene, you and I being women, you know, we know our conversation when we walk out the door. You know,
right?
If I'm going shopping, I know what I'm looking for already, and I know what conversation I need to have, where I'm going to wear that outfit so I can have that conversation before I walk in the door or as I'm walking in the door. When you think about this particular Somali model, Halima Adeen, what do you think she is saying? What do you think Vogue is saying and Allure is saying by putting her on the cover?
I think that they're praising her for it, and I hope that they are. I think she's a beautiful woman, and she is comfortable in her own skin, and I think she said it best when she had said, I want girls like that to be able to flip through a magazine and see someone who looks like them. And something like that, you know, everybody wants to have that. Everybody wants to feel like they have a connection to someone. And so I hope that it's something that is truly embraced. I know when I saw the Vogue editorial, I saw it before, you know, I knew that I was even doing this, and I was looking through this and I saw her images in there. I was like, wow, this is really beautiful. I was really taken back by it, and I thought it was great. And I was really proud of Vogue for showcasing something like that. And I was like, this is fashion forward, and this is where we need to go. We need to keep moving in this direction. And I thought it was a really great opportunity and a really wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, I think Kylie Kardashian has really had some, not Kardashian, Kylie, what is her dad's name?
Jenner.
Thank you, Jenner. Kylie Jenner. Yeah. It was really difficult for her when she did that beautiful spread, you know, where they were supposed to be using, they were in India, and people, you know, were writing in and saying all types of terrible things, like, why didn't you use an East Indian woman? Why in the world did you use Kylie? So that can also backfire on us when we're trying to present a new image or a new style from another nation. It really depends on the model that you put in that in order for people to receive it. Do you guys remember when Will Smith's daughter, Willow, did that cover of Teen Vogue, I think it was? Did you guys see that?
I'm trying to remember the context.
Yeah, I feel like it sounds kind of familiar, but I'd have to do a little more, know a little more about it to see if I can jog my memory again.
Well, let me tell you, it was the talk of the town. It was just so much going on, so much going on, all the social media, and people really talked about it. So I know that it's talking. I know it has a lot to say, but when you, and it becomes very political, by the way. And when you guys sit down as designers, do you think to yourself, I need to make a statement about this that I saw in the news or this book that I read or this article that I read that has to do with politics, and you decide to put that into your design? Either one of you, jump right in.
Well, I can speak for myself in that it might not be that might not be the driving force for a design, but as a designer, you pull in everything that is going on in the world, and that might subconsciously affect what you're doing. If the world is in mourning, that might be reflected in your designs. If there's celebration, that might be, but you might not be going out trying to hit this message, but it just might happen just through the ether of through the world as it is right now.
But Jolene, you know, musicians, I'm a singer, and musicians, we choose things to say something, right? So I might, you know, my brothers, when they're writing songs, or if I write a song and I've only written like three, but they're prolific, and they may say, I need to write something about the times, what's going on right now. So if there's a political statement to be made, would you ever get into that with your designs?
You know, I think it has to be something that is appropriate, but it also has to be for my customer as well. I mean, I 100% agree with Christopher in that when you're designing something, you kind of just pull in everything that is around you. That's kind of, you're kind of a sponge in a way, and you soak it all in, and that gets shown through your work. You know, it might not be something so blatant and obvious, but it doesn't mean that it's not there. So it's kind of something, because you always still have to keep it in perspective to who your customer is as well also.
Yeah, who your customer is, because a lot of customers don't want to hear it. You know? It's like, don't get political with me, honey, because we pick who we want to wear based on how they line up with what we think and how we believe and what we want to say. I really do think that. I go into stores not just because those clothes fit me, but those are the clothes that speak for me, like I said earlier, and I want to make sure that I can continue my conversation in their line. And so, oh, and I want to remind you guys, Teen Vogue is the magazine that Willow was on, and it was from fall of 2016. If you get a chance, go and look at that layout. It is beautiful. All right, you guys, before I let you go, I want to make sure that we tell people where to find your designs, what you're doing. So let's start with you, Jolene.
You can find it on my website at jolenetorvik.com. You also through social media, that will kind of link you there. But then I also sell my clothing at Showroom in Minneapolis. The address is 615 West Lake Street. So if you have a chance to head down there, it's a really great place for local designers. The entire store is all about local designers. So it's a really cool.
I wonder if I've been in your store. 615, huh? So is the store open every day?
We are closed on Sundays, and I believe Mondays right now too. We've been open some Mondays in the past. Otherwise, it's Tuesday through Saturday. The hours for every day, I believe, are from 11 to 7.
And that's spelled J-O-E-L-E-E-N-E?
J-O-E-L-E-E-N. Torvik, T-O-R-V as in Victor, I-C-K.
Oh, we just destroyed your name. I'm so sorry about that, honey.
Everybody does.
I'm so sorry. Christopher, jump right in.
Yes. Well, you can view my portfolio and fashion accessories at ChristopherStraub.com.
Okay.
And I also have a collection of children's books. I'm an author and an illustrator for a series of children's books. And I have a brand new one that the pre-sale has begun right now. And that can be seen on my website as well.
Okay. And again, that's Christopher Straub. That is STRAUB.com. What a pleasure to have both of you guys on and to talk about the importance of fashion. Whether we like it or not, theater does it, music does it, and fashion does it as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember those broomstick, I think they're called broomstick skirts. You remember those, Jolene, that we used to wear in the 80s?
Yes.
Or late 70s, and it was kind of hippie-like, you know, and you wear the bohemian type of top with it. I'll never forget when one of my nieces in high school, they started wearing those again, you know, that retro wear I was talking about. And, honey, they didn't wear a slip. Nobody even knew what a slip was. Do you know what a slip is, Jolene?
Absolutely do.
Okay. Seriously, Christopher, do you know what a slip is?
Yes, it's an undergarment below us, underneath the skirt.
Well, thank God, honey, because these young people don't know. Somebody need to put up a big billboard and say, put something on under that. I don't need to see all of your goodies. God bless
I
you.
Agree.
Right? Jolene and Christopher, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye, you guys.
Or bye.
All right, that's ChristopherStraub.com and also JoleneTorvik.com. You got to check them out because really, you know, this whole thing with this model from the Twin Cities, that's just really important. So congratulations, Halima. Congratulations. We'll be back in a moment. Well, right now it's 8:56 here at WCCO, and this time check is brought to you by Wally McCarthy's Cadillac Hummer. Certified Cadillacs on sale up to 40% off the original MSRP. Check out McCarthyAuto.com today. Well, we've got a great hour for you next. Of course, it's Center Stage. All things arts and entertainment. We believe you ought to know about it. Presented by Chanhassen Dinner Theaters. We've got so many shows to tell you about, but our first guest tonight at about 9:08 will be Caleb McEwen. In fact, Kalen, we've had him on before, if I'm not mistaken, and he has this band of super comedians, and we're going to talk about it. It's called Guardians of the Fallacy, which I thought was hilarious. That's just the perfect title right there. I also want to talk about my family. We will be at the Dakota on July 3rd. This is my time to talk about freedom, my time to dance and celebrate, you know, who we are, even though I know that we are in a very difficult time. So if you want to get rid of the cacophony of noise, that madness that's going on in the real world, come out on July 3rd. That's Monday, next Monday, a week from tomorrow, at the Dakota, and you'll hear the Steels performing. We're really looking forward to being there with you. Just go to DakotaCooks.com. All right. We also have in studio, by the way, those who know this group, they're called Nookie Jones. Nookie Jones. I'm not kidding you. I cannot wait to interview Cameron Kinghorn and Reed Kennedy. That's at 9:35, so don't go away. We've got a great show lined up for you in the Center Stage Hour. Thank you so much to all of my guests in the 7 o'clock and the 8 o'clock hour. I'm so looking forward to finishing out the night with Center Stage and then the Mom and the Michael Hour at 10 o'clock. We'll be back.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.